Happy Halloween. Today is the culmination of the spooky season, a time when we confront the terrors that lurk in the depths of our imagination. Have you been doing that? Have you been confronting the terrors that lurk in the depths of your imaginations? Sometimes we revel in the horror. We intentionally scare ourselves. We watch movies that have us turning on every light in the house as we sprint to the safety of bed. We scare our loved ones, and these days we film it and put it online for strangers to laugh at. We voluntarily enter haunted houses and haunted corn mazes. We pay people to terrify us. I remember a couple years ago walking through the haunted house at the state fair with our youth director, Jeff, firmly clutched between my hands as an involuntary human shield. But maybe more often, we ridicule the forces that would make us fearful. We dress our kids up like monsters and even devils just to get candy. We put plastic tombstones in our front yard, making death into decoration. We carve goofy grins into pumpkins and use them to light up the darkness and take back the night. And we should ridicule these things, because Christ has made them ridiculous. Where, O death, is thy victory? Where is thy sting? You hold no fear for us, no power over us. Today is not just Halloween. In this room, on this day, we celebrate Reformation Sunday. Just over 500 years ago, in 1517, Martin Luther, the namesake of our church, nailed 95 theses, 95 points for debate, up to a church door. Doesn't that sound dramatic? What a huge deal. It's like a post-it note. Why are we still talking about this 500 years later? In part because it was the symbolic start of the Reformation, a massive theological and political revolution that would give rise to a new tradition, among other things, the Lutheran Church. But still, so what? Why would we celebrate the birth of a church, of an institution, for so long? Who cares so much about one church versus another? Well, at its best, the Lutheran Church preserves something precious and unique. And that is the greater legacy of 1517, one more worth celebrating and remembering. You see, Luther's intention all those centuries ago was not to found a new church, but to defend the purity and the power of the gospel. Okay, here comes some church history, and I know your brains and muscles are trained to shut down and go to sleep. I promise it won't be that long, and I really do think it's important. Here we go. The document Luther nailed to the church door all those years ago was a response to the selling of indulgences in his region. Representatives from Rome were selling these papers to raise funds for the construction of St. Peter's Basilica. The problem was they were attaching the grace of God to the transaction. At the time, purgatory played an important role in people's faith. Here's how it worked. In this life, you sinned and you atoned for sin. It was constant debits and credits. And at your death, if you had a debt of sin still unpaid, but you'd done nothing worthy of eternal damnation, you went to this place, purgatory, where you worked off that debt, and when it was done, you ascended to heaven. The Pope's salesmen were promising the people that the money they gave to the church would lessen their loved ones' debts and secure early release from purgatory. They were saying, you could, and indeed you should, pay for God's mercy. To Luther, this was the utter ruin of the faith and a hill absolutely worth dying on. Because faith, Luther argued, is trust in God. If we pay for God's mercy, if we pay for God's forgiveness, our trust ultimately is only ever in ourselves. And it's all on our ability to pony up the dough, our ability to do for ourselves, our ability to justify ourselves before God. And Luther, in the 16th century, rightly recognized that that this was a fool's errand and could lead only to despair and finally the hopelessness of judgment and the grave. Scary stuff. And so in response, this anonymous, practically, friar from some backwater college town in Germany asserted the full power of the gospel promise. The promise that Jesus has secured for us, which is to say, for you, the grace of God through his own life, death, and resurrection. No longer should we accept the notion that God's love and forgiveness were to be cheaply bought with anything we could offer. No longer should we allow the mercy of God to be hidden behind some veil of fear, whether that's fear of death or fear of punishment or fear of our own unworthiness. No. Faith casts out fear. It conquers it. And so, we can freely mock the devil. You shall not take the Lord's name in vain, but you can use the devil's name however you want. You can put your kids in red pajamas and plastic horns on their heads. We can mock the power of the grave by putting plastic skeletons on our porch wearing sunglasses. And we can even mock, and some of you will really appreciate this, all the pastors and teachers of the faith that would try to capture us by fear and hide God behind whatever they want from us. Money, votes, obedience. As your pastor, as one of your pastors, I want you to be very wary of anyone who tries to make you afraid in the name of God. Any religion that wants you turning in on yourself, fretting and fussing over your own fate, is denying you the freedom of faith, denying you the chance to live freely and joyfully in this world as a child, a parent, a friend, a spouse, a neighbor, and in all of these things, a servant, joyfully devoted to the people around you. Because that's what the gospel does. Instead of worrying about ourselves all the time, we're free to trust in God, in God's absolute power and sovereignty, and then consider how God is calling and sending us into this world. Look at the story we read today. How does it start? The prophet Isaiah sees the glory and power of God so gigantic that just the hem of God's robe fills the temple. And what does he think? He's horrified. Woe is me, Isaiah calls out. I am ruined. Standing before God, Isaiah can only think of his unrighteousness. I am a man of unclean lips, he says. But how does the story end? A burning, purifying gift from God makes Isaiah, hey presto, righteous. Just like that. Takes away his guilt. And when the Lord asks, whom shall I send to deliver my word to the people? Isaiah, freed from his fear and shame, pipes up in the very throne room of the Lord and volunteers. Here I am. Send me. Faith conquering fear and sending him out for service. In a minute, you're going to walk down these aisles, through those doors, and out into the world. On Reformation Sunday, I pray that in your absolute confidence that God loves you, in your fearlessness rooted in that faith, you will be open to the countless ways God might be calling you to be living reminders of that grace. Until we meet back here, same time, same place, next Sunday, for another reminder. Thanks be to God.